Hi, and thanks for listening. Just a quick note, this episode includes discussion of sexual violence on college campuses and the way that Liberty University has handled that issue.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. There is a there's a part of the show notes that I purposely have not read. Actually scrolled past. I'm very excited to hear about it and listen to it with pretty much virgin ears. And because on Sunday, I got a text message after having gloriously not been on Twitter for the better part of a week, which I highly recommend to anybody listening.
7 days? Like 7 full days?
Six.
It's pretty good.
You were serious about it. You were committed to the bit. I texted you about a golf thing, and you didn't respond for days.
Yeah, do not text me on vacation.
I felt because it was a golf thing, it was kind of supplemental to your vacation rather than a work thing. It's, but I understand that.
Buddy, when I'm gone, I'm gone. But somebody texted me on Sunday and said something to the effect of, why is Hugh Freeze at Liberty? ? This is why. And I was like, huh, that's kind of weird. But I had just gotten off a red eye and ignored it and went to bed.
You had no context whatsoever. That could have been anything.
Literally zero.
Could have been a compliment.
Literally zero. And I still really don't have much context, which is why I am just so excited.
Right now is when the organ music starts to come in just a little bit and the pastor gets up and kind of leans back. Make sure he gets that chest stretch in. Got to get that thoracic extension before you really want to put it in your diaphragm, because we're going to church.
I'm excited right now. I'm excited.
Well, if you want to hear us start a show in the old-fashioned way of talking about someone being just a bewildering dumbass,
but just a dumb bitch,
then congratulations. Your time has come. It is indeed Liberty Flames head coach Hugh Freeze. Quick background, which will become relevant for anyone who is not overly familiar with Liberty. It will become relevant. I'm not just doing this for my own personal edification. Liberty is a cesspool. It is a think tank for a type of political operative who believes in weaponizing one interpretation of the Christian faith tradition against anyone they don't like, which is to say anyone who is not a straight, white, cisgendered Christian, or anyone, as it will turn out, who has been the victim of or who has made an allegation of sexual assault on their campus. They don't like them very much either.
Don't spoil it.
So, you know, Liberty, a joke of a school, makes a ton of money on flimsy online courses. It's a self-dealing platform for the Falwell family. You probably know all of that already. Anyway, they want to be taken seriously despite all of these significant shortcomings. And one way they've tried to get there is by beefing up their football program the last couple of years. Now, the person who beefed up that football program, who I think was seen as a, wow, they really don't care about anything except winning games type of hire. Who was it, Godfrey? Before Hugh Freeze.
Art Briles. No, wait, what? Who was it before Hugh Freeze?
It not Art Briles. You're close. It wasn't
was
Art Briles.
I know. Joking.
Liberty hires in 2016, just a few months after this guy resigns in disgrace as Art Briles' boss at Baylor.
Oh, you meant the AD. I was like, okay, all right. I was like, what does Turner Gill have to do with any of this? Okay, sorry.
They hire this guy. Ian McCaw, who had been the Baylor athletic director, who oversaw Baylor during its heinous sexual assault scandal that went over many years and kind of blasted to public light in 2016. Some would think he should never work in college athletics again. I think most would think that. Liberty was in there quick. He resigned in the spring. They brought him on by the fall. Liberty thought, this is our fucking guy. Ian McCaw, he's a culture fit. Not long after, he finds a soft place to land and gives it, Godfrey, to one Hugh Freeze. This was very Liberty at the time, was it not?
Yes. Yeah. I'm not going to say a ton because I want you to set the table up until basically Monday. And then I can work backwards a little bit. We got to stop teasing it and just do the thing. But there is I hate this phrase. There is a lot to unpack. And if for some reason you, like Richard, have been on vacation plus 3 or 4 or 6 or a decade years, all of this is relevant. This does feel like one of our patron shows where we do the history of a school, but we kind of have to lay the track here for you to enjoy the ride.
Also, I know it's going to feel like one of these things that I know I do every couple months, at least on the show, where I just, you know, hey, I don't like someone politically or something, so I'm going to go on. Trust me, it'll all be relevant if you're coming around to it.
I'm giving you, it's Liberty, carte blanche.
There is a former student at Liberty, a young woman, a former class president by the name of Chelsea Andrews. Andrews is one of several Liberty students, formers, who spoke with ProPublica for a ProPublica,
I believe it's pronounced. I think it's pub, like the English pub.
ProPublica for a 2021 investigation.
Make it your own.
Into how the university handled allegations of sexual assault on their campus in Lynchburg, Virginia. Spoiler, they did not handle them well.
Alex, real fast. Okay, real fast. So far, does any of this have anything to do with college football, the Liberty football team, or the sport of football?
Nope. It's not, okay, it's not a checking. Baylor situation where this stems from the football team. So you might be wondering, how does Hugh Freeze get himself into this?
Cannot wait to see how this is brought around.
The article in ProPublica last year has a long list of reported misdeeds by powerful people at Liberty. Chelsea Andrews, is one of 10 former students, at least, who told the reporter on the story that they had not reported a rape to campus authorities because they were so confident that not only would Liberty not do anything about it, but that they, as the accusers, would be blamed by the school. A lawsuit against Liberty to that effect is ongoing.
Pause. Lawsuit against Liberty. Is lawsuit against Liberty the school? Does this have anything to do with the athletic department? Does this have anything to do with like the football team?
Nope.
Okay, just checking. All right, keep going.
Yep. Andrews has been public about her case. She has tweeted about it numerous times. And just after midnight on early Sunday morning, I guess that Andrews had tweeted something about Ian McCaw, Liberty's athletic director. Andrews shares a Twitter DM that she has received from one Hugh Freeze with some bizarre punctuation that says, quote, "You don't even know Ian McCaw. He is the most Jesus-like leader I have." And then it cuts off. The screenshot cuts off. But you get enough to get the picture that Ian McCaw is apparently, he's like Jesus. He's more like Jesus than any other leader that you could know. Now, this, according to the screenshot, is one of those message requests, which is what you get if you have unsolicited outreach to your Twitter DMs from someone you did not follow or message first. In other words, Hugh Freeze took it upon himself to start an argument in the direct messages of a woman who is suing his employer over its handling of sexual assault and who hired the Baylor rape scandal athletic director.
So still nothing to do with football whatsoever.
Well, I'd argue there's
a little bit to do with
now
football.
It has plenty to do with football. Hugh Freeze, you absolute dumbass. Cut to Liberty's lawyers with their heads in their hands, just not believing that a representative of their school would do this. Just the dumbest guy in college football. Just incredible. So Richard, that is why Hugh Freeze is at Liberty.
That's pretty incredible context for me. Yeah, like this, I'm serious. This is not a bit. I really did not know much of that information, which is a lot to take in. I will tell you right now.
May I have the floor?
Please.
I'm warming my instrument.
Just don't get us in trouble.
Again. Okay. Well,
I don't think he's going to get us. I don't think he's going to get us sued.
Okay. Last night, I tried to remember the first time that I could recall, or that I could bring to y'all where this happened, where Hugh Freeze, as an acting Division I football coach, of course, the instances in which I will recall will be an active Southeastern Conference head football coach, took it upon himself to be either a slide into the DMs cretin or a reply guy. And the one, like, there's no way to perform this experiment because it didn't happen on my feed. But I vaguely remember sometime in maybe late 2012 or 2013. So that would have been the first and second season that Hugh Freeze was at Ole Miss after 1 year at Arkansas State. A friend of mine who I was in journalism school with, his name's Clay Chandler. He used to work for the state government in Mississippi. Was a reporter a long time ago.
He's got some fucking stories.
I think anyone who's worked in state government in Mississippi could bend your ear a little bit.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. I want to say my old pal Clay was the first one. Now, it could have also been my friend Will Bardwell, another Ole Miss alum who runs. He's a golf writer and a lawyer in Jackson.
Great golf writer.
Will and I were at Ole Miss together at the same time. I think it could have been Will. It was either Will or Clay who made a very innocuous statement, boys. And I really want to hammer this home. It was in the middle of a college football season in the Southeastern Conference where it just means more, right? And they criticized something to do with play calling. And lo and behold, the criticism of the play calling was before a game. Ole Miss went on to win. And then on like the Tuesday of the following week, boys, guess who jumps in the replies 5 days after the fact? Is there a term for this in Twitter lexicon? Like heating up a completely like forgotten non-issue of a tweet, of a thread. Hugh fucking Freeze, head coach of an SEC team.
Himself.
Yes.
Cards on the table, by the
Alex,
way.
Alex, spoiler.
Cards on the table. To name search yourself on Twitter takes a significant amount of effort. You have to do it in a very specific way. Back in like 2018 or something like this, I asked someone how to do this because I was curious. It's like sticking your hand in a garbage disposal.
Yes.
You don't do this. I did it years ago. It was a poor idea.
If you are even a remotely public figure, yes.
The fact that Hugh is doing this in his position is utterly insane.
So Hugh becomes known as Ole Miss rises pre-NCAA sanctions. They're recruiting darling. They're winning football games. They're beating Alabama. As overly online, this gets noticed for years. This is noticed at the highest levels of power within the university. This is noticed, more importantly, in the coaching community, and more importantly, in the agent and AD and decision-making community, is that this man doesn't log off. Now,
oh, and Godfrey, speaking of which, this DM that he sent to this woman, she says it was at a late hour of the evening. It was not business hours. It was the weekend. It was late.
Okay. All right.
I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. No. I'm gonna be careful here. So this continues on throughout his time at Ole Miss, and again, like I said, the more important you are in the decision making matrix of who gets, you know, these $20-50 million coaching contracts, the more you notice that this guy who was able to beat Nick Saban twice is also like online more than college football bloggers. He's in the mentions. He's searching himself. He's Googling himself, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Shift forward for a second, because it was sort of like weirdly annoying even for his own team's fans. And then it became, I wouldn't say it was ultimately his downfall at Ole Miss, because that had to do with texting massage services on his university issued phone. I just would like to point out one more time, if you're thinking about hiring someone and spending $5-7 million a year on the most high profile like person on your campus, Hugh Freeze was such a cheap bastard. Between $4-5 million a year at the time, could not go scoot over to the Walmart and buy a $25 burner and or, like, do you guys remember calling cards? You're probably too young for that. Just like, it's got 100 minutes, you dial an 800 number, like
I don't remember
all of
that.
These things usual and suitable in the pursuit of something illegal, be it sexual, be it something you shove up your nose. This is not really rocket science here, but my guy didn't want to come off the 20 spot to buy a burner phone, and that's how he got fired from the University of Mississippi. I have to reiterate this every time because people think like, yeah, he got swept up in a recruiting scandal and he ultimately, no. They never found enough at the Committee on Infractions after 3 years to technically get him fired.
Also, Ole Miss dug in for him on like their notice of allegations.
Until the Alex. So, continue. All right. All throughout, this is where it becomes personal for me. I'm all over this investigation. I'm turning over stones. I'm getting people to talk. I'm procuring documents. Lo and behold, a man who wouldn't, I mean, when he was on top of the world, wouldn't piss on me or anybody else of my ilk to put out a fire, suddenly he shows up in the Minchies. He shows up, somehow he gets my cell phone number. This is unsolicited. Heard you're working to clear my good name. I remember that was the first time I got a message from him, and I thought, sometimes you get those weird text messages and it's like accompanied with a link and it's just like a phishing scam from like a foreign country to get like a, you know, your fucking bank routing number. That was the credulity I applied to that first text. But then as we were making the documentary, as I was writing all the stories, I thought, well, like, I need to engage him. This is source development. And so thus began a long, completely fucking fruitless relationship with Hugh Freeze in the DMs over the texts, where he proceeded after the fact, he'd already been fired, he'd already been disgraced, to basically spend his days hanging out at a golf course in Oxford, Mississippi, telling everyone what a bad job Matt Luke was doing, and then texting me to see when I was going to, quote, clear his name. The problem was, as we progressed in the investigation, I never once came across a fucking thing that cleared Hugh Freeze's name. But I did try and cajole, beg, push, browbeat him into being interviewed. The problem was, even when he gave me information on background, it was completely fucking fugazi. So, this is a very short version of what one day I will write if some Power 5 school is dumb enough to hire him, because I have promised that I would write a congratulations, you just hired this man piece for some outlet the moment that happens. But Alex, that's a little bit of a transition here, just a little bit, okay? Because I want you to hold the thought in your head about what you just heard, that this guy who's at liberty and the reasons why he's at liberty is doing this unsolicited to one of like the most hot button, the most sensitive, the most third rail of subject matters in college sports today, sexual assault, right? It didn't have a fucking thing to do with football until he put his dumb fucking face in the middle of it. So hold this thought about this is the decision-making matrix of this individual, okay? Because I want to skip ahead a little bit. For a while there, I made jokes when we were in the Banner Society today, days of praying for you, just the letter U. I used to do it to you guys. I used to do it all like people all the time. Praying for you, and you've probably seen myself and maybe like Holly or Spencer or one of the full cast idiots doing that. That is a joke because after all the shit came out and I published everything and Hugh Freeze came off as just the absolute bumbling fucking circuit riding snake oil salesman that he was, who happened to run 5 or 6 fucking trick plays that look good. He started praying for me. He started sending me messages saying, praying for you, for me, for Steven.
Oh, well, this makes sense because he has a direct line to the most Jesus-like leader in the world.
So I got to take a breath here. So I still to this day don't quite understand this. And then as the years went by, different articles, podcasts, et cetera, I laid bare as much as I could the truth about how deceptive and how purposefully stupid. Not purposefully deceptive, purposefully stupid people like Hugh Freeze and Ross Bjork and Michael Thompson, all these individuals who are high ranking people in college sports still were during that investigation, how they were basically either asleep at the wheel during the time or like, I don't know, willfully complicit and then willfully ignorant, et cetera, et cetera. I just start telling these stories as the years passed. This builds up to text at 1 a.m, Alex, text at 9 a.m. Not sure why you... Where's my phone? We'll do this. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Damn, folks. This is so exciting.
Okay, I've cleared the... I haven't received one in 6 months because I cleared out the cache of text, but the last one that I have saved is not sure what I've done to cross your path, praying for you. That was the last one that I have. That's over a year ago now. So, and I've got multiple ones like this. So just by simply doing my job on top of that, and I put a little English on this because I said at the end of Foul Play, at the end of all this investigations, hey, this was my alma mater. I was lied to. Other national reporters were lied to this entire time. And because this was my alma mater, I feel like I was made to look a lot worse because of it. So fuck them forever. The worst thing you can do is lie. I've done a whole rant on this before. Like, tell me you can't talk to me, whatever. Just no comment me and then call me back after the fact. Richard, I think you would much rather prefer that, right? Than a source that you've worked with for years who's in a high ranking place. Just say, hey, look, I can't talk to you about this. Or just ghost. Just ghost for a month. Just
don't pick up the phone.
But to lie to me and then double down and then be in conspiracy by the definition of the word with, you know, the information director or another athletic director or other people, like to basically concoct this horse shit to try and jam it down the throats of people in the media you think will buy it at the cost of their own reputations professionally. Ross Bjork is a piece of shit. I'll tell him to his face forever. I don't care if he's the athletic director at Texas A&M. He orchestrated that. Hugh Freeze is a piece of shit. So I get the I'm praying for you texts. I don't want to get too into the foul play. I'm gonna curve us back in. All right. Do you guys remember what happened about, I think it was two coaching cycles after all that shit with Freeze? Do you guys remember? We were all in New York together, actually, at a Banner Society event. That coaching cycle, there were like OC openings at all of these major jobs, Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, I think like maybe South Carolina too at the time for Muschamp. Do you know what name kept showing up for these OC jobs? Hugh Freeze.
Could it be? Yes.
So come to find out after a little bit of note comparison and a couple checking, you know, just a little bit of checking to see which reporters are, I don't know, let's call it sensitive or friendly with the Sexton CAA machine. Hugh Freeze is magically Hugh Freeze is the most in-demand offensive coordinator in the country for a minute. And yet he doesn't really actually have a line in on all these jobs. I'll show my cards out. I called Willie Taggart when he was head coach at Florida State. I've obviously interviewed that guy before. If you're a longtime listener, that shouldn't surprise you that I could just call him and go, hey, what's up with this? He goes, I never interviewed him. He swung by campus one day. Coaches and Richard, you can, I guess, elaborate. Sometimes coaches who aren't working, they just make visits. They just go around and talk to people.
Well, yeah, you probably know somebody on the staff, work with somebody on the staff, yeah, or whatever.
You just stand on the sidelines at practice.
Yeah, you literally go to practice or, you know, you pop in a meeting or something like that.
There's a current he's currently an analyst on an SEC team, but he was an OC for an SEC school. I talked to him periodically and like he got fired. He like immediately was like, well, I'm just going to spend the rest of the, you know, whatever that year was, he would just go to practices, NFL, college, CFL, just to be like, oh, I'm kind of curious how they do this. So like, I just call them up and go.
And there's a lot of like, that's invited.
Yes.
Because it's something that should be and would like to be reciprocated throughout the industry.
So no one really can confirm that Hugh Freeze is an actual legit candidate at places like Auburn, Alabama, Florida State, etc. So magically, this still happens to this day. The reason I'm bringing all this up, Alex, is because the man works the text messages and the man works the DMs, right? It's still happening also because he is a Sexton client and they do have a ridiculous outsized amount of influence in the industry because they have the most pieces on the chessboard. So yes, there are some journalists who, let's call it maybe, are in perpetual service to that outfit. And if you don't believe me and you think I'm just being an asshole, Google Hugh Freeze Auburn replacement Brian Harsin. And see how large the outlet is that's perpetuating the rumor that Hugh Freeze could be in play at Auburn last year if they were to get rid of Brian Harsin. Now, Alex, all of this in your head right now. Does it seem like, even in an Auburn world, all right? Because Auburn's the craziest, right? We make that joke all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. This is the clearest evidence yet that Hugh Freeze is Hugh Freeze. He has not changed. Right. He is the scorpion in the old parable. This is what he's going to do.
All right? Yeah, dude. Auburn is looking at Hugh Freeze and being like, damn, man, like we like to have a good time, too. But you've got to dial this thing back like 70 degrees.
So every day that goes by in which not only does he pull shit like this, like getting involved publicly with a sexual assault lawsuit against your school that you have nothing to fucking do with. But every day that that happens, but not only that, but also that he then publicly expresses on social media platforms that he has no idea why that he's quote unquote in trouble or at fault or why this is a bad idea is another day further or past him beating Saban in back-to-back seasons or having a big signing class, right? I think of guys like Bobby Petrino or even Houston Nutt, which is now sort of an internet meme, and like why they became unhirable despite their bona fides in the SEC. And it's not because of a win-loss record. It's because absolutely no one at the end would trust them to run a program. It's a trust issue. Okay? So the idea that like Auburn, because we all think like, all right, I've already said this on the show four times. Penn State beats the brakes off of Auburn in September. Then like Missouri scores 50. They fucking fire him so they can start their public search. Let's just say that happens, okay?
That's right. That would never happen. What do you mean?
The idea that Auburn would trust Freeze not to implode and not to do this when he is consistently doing this with no remorse, and more importantly to ADs, with no awareness of why it's bad,
not just to ADs,
crazier than fucking Auburn crazy.
Not just to ADs. And here's where I think this becomes a lesson for all of college football and just like how something works for presidents, for the ADs bosses. So Hugh Freeze can go and talk out of his ass at Liberty and defend the guy who oversaw the Baylor athletic department during one of the worst, grisliest scandals in the history of college sports. He can do that at Liberty because Liberty does not give a shit. Liberty has made clear that its institutional priorities have nothing to do with protecting its student body, particularly those students who make allegations of sexual violence on campus. Liberty doesn't care. That's why Hugh works there. He can do this kind of bullshit there. Even in the SEC, which we think of as like the, oh, it just means more, like nothing matters but winning, yada, yada. Good fucking luck walking into a president's office on a Southeastern Conference campus, or even up to Greg Sankey and getting his blessing for this in 2022 and having to explain the do I call it baggage that Hugh carries around that he throws over his own shoulder for no reason whatsoever, other than that his ego is that way. By the way, Hugh, I assume you're listening to this because someone in your athletic department probably sent it to you. Hello. But this is why you're not going to be an SEC head coach.
No fucking around. This is not a joke on a podcast. You want to go on the record? Let's go all the way. I know you're listening. All the way. I have questions that are backed up over 8 years that you have fucking ducked and shimmied away from. And I'll call A&M to verify with Ross. That's fine. If you are serious about this, go on the record. I'll give you 60. I will drive to Lynchburg fucking tomorrow and set up and let's go. Tape recorder, let's go. If you believe this and you want to do a dance with scripture, let's go.
By the way, one episode that I thought back to when I saw this was that back in 2016, Bud Elliott and Morgan Moriarty, colleagues of ours in our SB Nation days, wrote something about a recruit interview that a recruit had done with some reporters at an Under Armour combine, where the recruit...
One of my favorite stories. Keep going. I'm so glad you just brought this up.
The recruit relayed something. A question was asked, we've heard a lot about negative recruiting at Ole Miss with the NCAA thing. Remember, they're being investigated going on. What has Ole Miss said to you about that? This was a four-star cornerback who Ole Miss wanted to get. And here's what the player said, Chevin Callaway. Quote, well, Coach Freeze told me when you're that big and out there with faith in Christ, he's like, what do you expect? Jesus got nailed to the cross. There was more. I'll end the quote there.
Do you want to tell the entirety of that story of what happened next? Because we've never said that publicly either.
There was a very intense walk back publicly by the recruit where he tagged Hugh Freeze, which I think you should have expected. But Godfrey, you tell the other thing.
Oh my God, I found it. I found it. December 28th, 2016. So out of nowhere, I get solicited. Now, keep in mind, this is a couple days after Christmas. I remember I was getting ready to go to a bowl game, just come back from holidays, and I just get a text message that says, this is from Freeze, Chevin Callaway, and then his number with the area code. Hope you will call him. Need you to call him Coach Freeze. Always love when adults sign their text messages. Love that. I say adults like I'm not 41. I texted back. He called me and I put him in touch with our reporter at Under Armour who got the original quote. The reporter will contact him shortly. Actually, we're telling the story out of order, but I'll keep going. Appreciate your effort to get the accurate story. I hope they get connected. Then it looks like a day or two later, I put, my hands are tied in terms of retraction because the kid said it verbatim. I'm not going to do that. What happened was Hugh Freeze caught a mile of shit for what Alex just read off. Hugh Freeze, on the holidays, it was like kind of a skeleton staff, and Morgan, who is a friend of ours, writes up the story from the quote that Bud got. Is that right, Alex?
I believe so.
Yes. Yeah, so we wrote up the blog, and Ole Miss, like the sports information department of Ole Miss, and it'd be funny to say, like, weren't they in bowl practices?
Like, something like
they,
that.
They're in the middle of something way that, fucking
bigger.
It's about
that time of year. Yeah, it's about right? that time of year.
Something way fucking bigger. They're in bowl practices, all this kind of stuff. December
28, 2016. Weren't they about to? No, they were. That was the year they self-imposed a bowl ban. So no.
Okay.
And then they went 5-7. So they sort of self-imposed. Right. Okay. They sort of self-imposed. You know. Anyway.
Freeze. Because that quote that y'all just heard.
Actually, that might not have been. They might have just missed it because they were 5-7. But go ahead.
Okay. The quote that y'all just heard that Freeze gave, that the kids, this is the kid saying it. I want to be super clear here, okay? This kid talks to Bud Elliott and says, hey, this is what Coach Freeze told me. Bud transcribes it very quickly because Bud's a robot. He puts it in our group chat. Hey, what can we turn into blog? Like, what can we turn into some content pieces here? We isolate that. There's an editorial decision. And Morgan writes it up. This was connected to what had been going on just the entire, like I call it the foul play thing all the time, but just the NCAA Mississippi saga was in full swing at the time. And the question, the conceit, the purpose of the article, guys, was that, hey, like, why would a recruit from out of state come to a program that may or may not be like close to the hammer from the NCAA? So Freeze sees the reaction to what the kid says as negative, because everyone's like, holy shit, fuck this guy. He's wrapping himself in the Bible as usual, and he's not being honest with the kid, with himself, with anybody, right? Turns into a huge fucking ordeal. Ole Miss and Freeze decide to go after our writer, Morgan, like a couple days after Christmas when no one's around. It's all coming back to me now. I was like, on the way back from Louisiana, I had to pull over. Hey, what the hell's going on? Why do I have 6 messages from Ole Miss? Why is Bud calling me? Why is, you know, Spencer, Brian Floyd, all these people? Why are they, Jason Kirk? Everyone was like, oh shit. They tried to bully our writer into retracting something that one of their own fucking verbal commits said about the head coach, which is not our fucking deal. That's not our problem.
I'm not sure that it was a verbal commit, but a recruit nonetheless, same point. Coaches are responsible for what they say.
I cannot remember if he was verbal at the time.
We got it directly
from that source.
Yeah, I don't believe that he was verbal, but he was an Ole Miss recruit and said these things to microphones. So, yes.
This was a good anecdote, Alex, just because we could probably sit here and piddle fuck around for the rest of this podcast and come up with 10 more like that. He has always been like this. He has also always been the first person to make the dumbest mistake on the largest platform possible, then stand up, dust himself off, and have absolutely no idea why he did it. And tell you that. Richard, from a scheme standpoint, what the fuck am I getting in Hugh Freeze I couldn't find elsewhere on the market right now? Like, I'm not asking you to moneyball it, but like,
no,
I mean, I don't even think you would need to moneyball it.
That's the thing that I think is, so it is similar with him and similar with Bryles, when I get down to it. Like, at the end of the day, strictly from a ball perspective, you can get what they do without hiring who they are 6-7 years after their kind of height and rise to stardom. That's how scheme works. Like, it trickles down, and once you do something well, everybody else adopts it, adapts it, does it better. And if you are yourself good, you adapt with the times and get away from your uncut shit unless you're Mike Leach.
The one guy that his name kept coming up last year because he was in Oxford and he's now at Oklahoma. I was asking some people down in Oxford, you know, because they were really they had a season better than they are used to in Oxford. And that's an understatement. I was like, what do you, you know, asking about when Jeff Lebby's name came up for other jobs? I was like, what's, you know, what's the read on Lebby? And they're like, he's Hugh Freeze without any of the Hugh Freeze problems whatsoever. He's like really dynamic offensive play caller, like amazing at networking, great in the like great public figure fits in Mississippi, all that stuff, like really fucking good recruiter. Like, I think people might be shocked and this may change, but Lane is not meticulous. Let's leave it at that. Lane's not a meticulous guy. And so if you were like Auburn and let's just say just this is a hypothetical now. OU has a great year. Fucking hire Lebby. And like Lebby's just the first guy I thought of because he happened to have been in Oxford this past year. But like there are 9 or 10 guys who are younger who are just as dynamic in recruiting. Like if Dan Lanning hadn't gone problems, to Oregon.
But yes.
Has not been blackballed.
Yeah.
There's some irony here because Lebby is tied to Briles. You can look it up. You know, if Dan Lanning hadn't left Georgia for Oregon, like go find a Dan Lanning. Why would you do that? Like, why would you go with a make and model that when you turn the ignition on, like a smiley face comes across the dashboard and it says like T-minus 10 minutes until self-destruction. Like it's the shittiest made Oldsmobile in the world. Like go find another fucking car that matches your specs. I'm running out of metaphor.
I just want to point something out about Freeze. It doesn't have to be like this for him. He makes it this way himself, even after whatever he did in the past. So like DJ Durkin is on Texas A&M staff. He ran a gross program at Maryland. A kid died in that program because of the actions of people Durkin was responsible for. Durkin's coach, he's a defensive coordinator for a team that could make the playoff this year. Well, probably not, but you understand.
But yeah, who?
Art Briles doesn't have a coaching job because what Art Briles did was so gruesome, and then he showed no sincere contrition whatsoever for years. What Hugh Freeze did, I don't really care. I don't think most people care if he Ole Miss paid players or whatever. I don't even think most people care that much about dialing an escort. I don't think most people care. But guess what? If you're going to keep acting this way and being a child, doesn't help you. Doesn't
Alex,
help you.
Alex, I will say this. From an administrative standpoint, when you go back, and this is why I feel like I didn't do my job well enough, but I just didn't know how to, like, if someone can go back in time and show me how to do it, I'll do it, or I'll admit that I did it wrong. All the reportage I did fails to show that how much of it was the AD, how much of it was how stupid was this? Because ADs who are hiring Hugh Freeze, Alex, you're right, they don't necessarily care about that in the era of NIL, but they do care about your ability to stay out of the headlines and stay out of trouble. Right. And that includes that even today, even in NIL, that does include the NCAA. There are contract stipulations all over really, really big coaching deals about running afoul of, you know, the whole like whatever the enforcement's going to be. So it is important. Now, on the moral barometer and the spectrum, no, it pales in comparison to what we're dealing with now. I mean, go from like the Deshaun Watson case down. So I get that. But, you know, it's just like Bobby Petrino. The idea that it wasn't the biker stuff and all the crazy rumors you've probably heard. And there's like wild stories that are like conspiracy theories about how all that went down with the motorcycle. It's that he then went and he lied to everyone that it was essentially his chain of command, all of his bosses. That's the problem.
That's the story. Hugh Freeze, good job. You're doing great.
That was really... I would argue that's more than I bargained for, but that is what I bargained for.
Well, I think Steven,
what I wanted,
I think Steven,
what I expected.
Steven had some things he wanted to get off his chest for a while, is what I read into that segment lasting as long as it did. Otherwise, in college football over the last week or two, we have not done a show on this feed in about 2 weeks. Not much new. Talking season starts today. We're recording this on July 13th. The Big 12 is, you know, out there talking about how great things are for the Big 12. And I'm sure that there will be relatively limited actual news to come out of those kinds of press conferences, but they are doing that. Speaking of the Big 12, I have kind of deduced that there was a little bit of let's leak some things to some reporters about how we're playing offense now, and we're going to go and poach the Pac-12. I think that the Pac-12 wants to look like it's on offense as well. Godfrey, talk about how people should discern this kind of rumor about who is trying to poach who now that the Pac-12 and Big 12 are kind of jostling to see who survives and who dies, or maybe both survive.
I'm gassed. This is funny. I'm gassed. I got to turn around and do this one too. All right. See, just offense can't stay on the field.
You know what? Take a breather. Take a breather.
No, I got it. I got it. I got it.
Because I'm asking you because Richard was on vacation when this was happening, by the way.
I think it feels a lot calmer in the last 24 hours, which, Alex.
Yeah, dude, I got back and nothing happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
was on fire.
Here's what you missed. And let me start by saying this. This shit's actually a lot harder to pull off than people realize. And what happens is, just like silly season in coaching, a big thing happens. A big active sitting head coach from big program goes to another.
Brian
big
Kelly
program.
Goes to LSU.
Yeah, right. Or any of those, Mario, or any of those, you know, Lincoln. The reason why last year was so crazy is we had three of those happen in 7 or 8 days, and that's unheard of. What normally happens is one of those happens, and then you have 3 weeks of like bonker speculation. So yes, it is insane that we are talking about UCLA and USC in the Big Ten. But that does not mean, and it also, if you sit down and you read the reporting, Alex, we mentioned this on the Patreon show, this stuff is like, it doesn't happen in 2 weeks. And it doesn't happen, yes, did it ultimately happen in reaction to Texas and Oklahoma? Absolutely. Is this Fox's sort of salvo against ESPN? Yes, but you can't pull this shit off in like 8 days.
I might disagree with that. So
the
big bombs that set off these realignment waves do not come together in 8 days. So Texas and Oklahoma,
No.
They do not come together in 8 days. USC and UCLA don't come together in 8 days. But after that, I mean, it didn't take long for the Sun Belt and the American and the Big 12. It was a chain reaction going the other direction for those conferences to react after Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, that stuff did come together in a month.
Well, hang on. What about the Sun? Are we saying the Sun Belt was directly informed by Red River to the SEC?
So, of course it was. Absolutely, it was.
I mean, yeah. I mean, directly. Yes, I guess. I mean, because the chain of candidacy.
Everything's a chain.
Right?
Yeah,
but the Sun Belt didn't lose anybody though.
Once the wave hits the shore, a lot of things start to happen pretty quickly. Is what I'm saying.
I might challenge the Sun Belt thing because they probably were headed in that direction.
Okay.
Regardless,
maybe not the Sun Belt.
The American
down to Conference USA. You could even take it down into FCS because of like Sam Houston, for instance, making the jump to CUSA as a result of CUSA needing names. I'm just saying that these things can happen fast after the initial detonation.
Big difference here is that the thing that everybody needed to happen fast is never, ever going to happen fast, which is everybody needed Notre Dame to do something.
Yes.
And Notre Dame is not ever going to move quickly if they move at all.
When,
which is a different opinion.
When historically have they ever had a sense of urgency?
Right. So that's the thing. If Notre Dame is the fulcrum here, which it pretty much is, the biggest one, that ain't going to happen quickly because they will not be pushed to do anything with deliberate speed when it comes to conference realignment. They don't have to.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly, if you were out.
Unless it's 2020.
If you were out last week, I think I would reiterate, this stuff is harder to pull off than people realize. And what last week and the week before that, conjecture's fun, but I'm definitely reporting, even though I'm not a reporter and I have a couple thousand Twitter followers, that Virginia is going to the SEC. Like that's the flotsam that happens. It's the same dumb shit that happens in coaching season. We want this show to be informative, but we also, I think more than anything else, want to help you figure out how to absorb all this shit. And my strong suggestion is that anytime you have a single piece of realignment news that becomes verified in which school presidents voted in and there's a press release, okay? In the wake of that, you are going to have more flotsam bullshit, okay? And that's okay. That's fine. That kind of conjecture and speculation and excitement is an emotional investment. And hey, we make a living off that. So I'm not going to downplay it. But no, Virginia's not going to the SEC this week. Miami's not going to, I'm trying to think of the dumbest ones I heard last week. Anyone want to help me out here? I heard separate new league for the football schools of the ACC, which I thought was really cool. The one I wanted to slide out there was that somehow the Big East was coming back, but I didn't have the time.
It's straightforward from here, Stephen, to get the Big East back.
There it is. All right, let's start it now.
You need the Big Pac Super Conference out west. You need the ACC to get picked clean by way of Duke and North Carolina to the Big Ten. Right. You need Florida State and Clemson to the SEC. What are Pitt, Louisville, Virginia Tech, Boston College, Syracuse, et cetera? What are they doing? And what do they have in common? A Big East lineage. West Virginia maybe comes and goes in place with them then. You bring back USF, who was in this league for a little while.
You bring back USF.
You have the old Big East minus a lot, but you have the old Big East.
I want you to stop just for a second. I want you to write all this down, because then at the end of this, I want an entire like revolutionary cycle of college football realignment to end up like in a Game of Thrones ending, sort of, that all along it was UConn, and specifically like the No Escalators blog, that it orchestrated all this just to get the Big East basketball tournament back. Like in Matt, like that was the purpose of all of this fucking strife.
UConn is independent in football. They would there come and play in the new Big East. This would be a blast. Also, I do want to motion, I've been thinking about this for a few weeks, that if the Big 12 and the Pac-12 were to do a merger of equals rather than a poaching, I think it should be called the Big and Pac Conference.
Big Pac.
Oh, God. Okay. I don't have anything for that. Yeah.
Okay. Richard, one of the things that I want to talk about quickly before we get to the actual 2022 season for a minute, by the way, conference preview starting next week. I thought it was going to be this week, but it wasn't, is... not reporting, but like rooting wise, as this all develops, I think everyone, I mean, I just kind of put something on the table for me where like, I would love it if this all developed in such a way that the next iteration of the ACC is just the old Big East. I think that would be fun, even though I think it probably isn't going to happen. For you, Richard, as you are like rooting for what might happen in this arena next, are you just putting on your Florida man hat and just like hoping that no other Floridian teams get an SEC dance card, or
you
like,
couldn't give
it.
You couldn't.
What is the thing that you're
actually
rooting for?
I don't think he gives a shit. I mean, you answer. Do you give a shit if Florida State came? I mean,
no, I don't. I don't know.
So do you believe? Do you believe the line of thinking? Do you believe the line of thinking? Because this line of thinking exists. It's an internet line of thinking that Florida would oppose Miami or FSU coming to the SEC.
Do I believe that Florida would oppose it? Sort of, because A&M was obviously not thrilled when the folks came in last summer. Do I think Florida would oppose it? Maybe.
I think more than Florida would oppose it. How's that?
Yeah, I just think so. The grounds of not adding them, Florida State, is that it doesn't add like significant territory, right? Like Texas added some significant territory where Florida State doesn't really. Florida State's kind of sandwiched between, geographically, literally, between Auburn and Gainesville. And so I get on grounds, if you're going to say it doesn't expand us territorially, legitimately, or what have you. But like, no, Adam, it's cool. It's fun. It would be fun. Like, I don't, it would be kind of neat.
I'd like to add, by the way, as we speculate, this is just idle chatter. I think if anything,
I don't think the SEC is going to.
No, I want to reiterate, because I've been asked this on other shows and like got clipped out of context and stuff, that I was like talking about Virginia Tech and UNC. No, the SEC, based on everything that we know right now and people we've spoken with, that there's no reason to expand. At a certain point, you will reach critical mass. That's the next conversation we need to have on this step. However, like it's still fun to do this. But Alex, if you're asking me for like rooting for something, two schools I'm rooting for, because I don't think anyone else in this world is, Oregon State and Washington State. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. We can put Cal and Stanford in sort of a separate bucket. Those two schools were sort of football forward, pro football cultures that no one seemed to give a shit about in the wake of a potential Pac-12 death, although it seems like something is going to survive out there.
It does seem like something is going to survive out there, and I'm hoping that it does, and that it doesn't result in those schools getting, you know, relegated or whatever you would call it.
But I will say the thing I am rooting for is Notre Dame. Enough already.
Really?
Just do it.
Oh man, I flipped around entirely.
So you're saying you want him to join? You want him to join?
Yeah, man. I it's not endearing. It's first of all, it's not that it's not endearing.
I think it's awesome now.
Hold on. It's not that it's not endearing. It was endearing before the ACC stuff, but like, it's not real independence. They play 5 ACC games, Stanford and USC and Navy every year.
Yeah.
That's 8 of 12. And this is not a playoff thing, because on this show, I have said more than once, when Notre Dame goes undefeated, Notre Dame deserves to be in the playoff.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Mm-hmm. And they've made the two playoffs. Fine. Cool with it.
Okay.
Just join a league already.
You see, I disagree.
I think the independence streak right now is stolen valor independence, because it's not real independence, because it's a half and half schedule agreement with one league and 8 and 3 other teams.
I agree that it's not full independence, but I like the politics of Notre Dame being a perpetual wild card in the sport. We cover the sport for a living. I think it's good when college football has different types of entities fighting with each other. Like, I could snort the stuff about the ACC conspiring to put off playoff expansion in the hopes that it could find a system that locks out Notre Dame and forces Notre Dame to come crying to them, which is never going to happen. But I love the idea that the ACC might want to do that. I like trying to like plaster 3D chess onto things where it doesn't necessarily exist, because I think that's fun. And it's a good mental workout. And also, I've started to get annoyed with like the class of person who I think is kind of poisoning the well with like, you know, Notre Dame is going to be so screwed if they can't join a conference. And like, it's not possible to be an independent these days. Notre Dame, as Godfrey and I talked about on a Patreon show last week, splitsonduo.com, has been taking a financial bath for years relative to the Big Ten and the SEC. I'm not saying they completely don't care, but I'm saying that they care about broadcast money less than most do. I think it's kind of, I think it would be fun if Notre Dame kept kind of throwing some chaos into things by staying on its own. Just me.
I understand where Richard's coming from, and that I like the idea of calling it stolen valor, this idea of independence, when you're sort of, you have at least an ACC spine when it comes to plugging dates, because we've said this, we've explained this on the show before many times, really more in the case of BYU, which has considerably less sway than the Irish. Anybody can fill out a schedule up until about October 15th or 20th, but it's really, really hard to put together a quality schedule on the back end, because the opponents that you want are in the middle of conference play, and they don't,
ask UConn.
Yes, they don't want to play anything resembling a good program that they're not mandated to, because they're in conference races. So yeah, I get that, Richard. However, like at this point, I think I put this maybe in Alex's show notes. I think I'm just a little wary of another tradition domino falling so quickly. So while it has been a multi-decade saw for me and many other Southerners to complain about Notre Dame's outsized influence and preferential treatment, like, I'm far less pissed off at Notre Dame than I am at like the curmudgeons behind the Rose Bowl for their tinkering and fuckery with the postseason.
The guys, they have a vote in the playoff.
I think it's fine. I mean,
they're one fucking school.
Richard, what if this is what I proposed while you were gone? And I got a lot of positive feedback from Irish fans of several different sort of walks of fandom, as in like holding a degree and not.
And you got feedback from others who thought, no way this would ever work because it's the internet. But I like the idea.
So now you have, Richard, you rattled it off very quickly. I think you said like, oh, they got this ACC spine or whatever. And then you said Navy, USC, and Stanford, right? Okay. Well, USC is now going to the Big Ten. They also rotate in schools like Notre Dame will occasionally play Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue. Just historically, there's a Big Ten familiarity just by virtue of geography and history for Notre Dame. In fact, I would argue, and I think a lot of Notre Dame fans would argue, that if you plucked the same amount of Big Ten schools at random in this entire pie and put them out for Notre Dame, it would look more like a Notre Dame schedule than them playing like Georgia Tech and Wake Forest and Louisville. Like, that's kind of strange. And it is. It's weird. The ACC thing has, I have yet to meet a Notre Dame fan that thinks it's particularly cool.
I don't think it's a fan thing. I do think it's important for Notre Dame to be able to tell mom that we're going to play in Atlanta. Or we're going to play.
Oh, no doubt.
We're going to play in
Florida. In Florida.
We're going to play in Florida. Yeah. Like, that's
important. Yeah. Oh, I mean, the FSU, Miami, and it's funny I mentioned Georgia Tech because you know where that game got moved to every time they've played? Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's not at Bobby Dodd.
Oh, yeah.
Notre Dame fans from New Jersey can hop a cheap flight to Hartsfield, the largest, cheapest airport in the world, then scoot over to an NFL stadium. Like, it's designed on Notre Dame's behalf, no doubt. But why not? Alex, I can't remember exactly what I said now. So you know you're going to play Navy because like that goes back to World War II. They're not going to break that. Okay. Stanford, I think they might be willing to part ways with. USC, they're not. If you gave Notre Dame fans a schedule that I guaranteed you had, USC as part of a Big Ten chunk, an ACC chunk that would at least rotate. So where, like you're saying, Richard, they could get into the Carolinas and those high schools where they're trying, where, you know, where this new coaching staff says they want to be more of a presence in, right? And then you just added on that sprinkle of like the demanded traditional games. And then, by the way, they still play, what, at least one scrub a year. And by scrub, I just mean like a G5 team that they should beat, you know?
Yeah, they played Toledo last year.
Right? Yeah, they'll play a Nevada. They'll play like a, you know.
And almost lost.
They also play. No, that was Michigan. I was going to say Vanderbilt. But like you can still do all of that. And I was looking at it from a television contract concern. It kind of screws NBC if they keep the home games because that scrub game is always going to be a home game. But I think there's ways around that as well. I know they've had success, and I shouldn't write off the entire ACC experiment because I've talked to a lot of the, let's call them sidewalk alums, who really, really like playing Syracuse in the Meadowlands or playing BC at Fenway. They really like that shit. Although I still don't understand why you wouldn't go to Foxborough, but I don't fuck with, because I don't Foxborough fuck with Boston,
is,
so whatever.
Dude, Foxborough is impossible to get to. It's a bitch to get to from Boston. It really is.
Fucking the Braves move their stadium to the edge of the perimeter of the interstate, and there's like 90 national think pieces written about it. And like,
yeah, but the problem is, well, two things. A, it's always been
there. There's no minorities that's in Boston. Is that where we're headed?
No. But that's where the old Patriots Stadium. What, like, it literally was.
It was in the it was in the parking lot.
But the thing with Foxborough is like it's different. It's like one road, weirdly one road in, one road out type shit to get from Boston to Foxborough. It's just in a very inconvenient place.
Secret Boston sports fan and Boston patron, Richard Johnson.
So
yeah, that's me.
A disclosure from me. I think in the last few years, I've started to think that Notre Dame is a little bit cooler than I used to think they were. Now, plenty of things to gripe about with Notre Dame.
They got a lot cooler after December.
They're very in our face. They do not win big bowl games. Haven't in my entire lifetime, or Richard's, I don't think. Plenty of very iffy worldview things from powerful people at Notre Dame and who have been there. Sure. But maybe I thought they were cooler because we did some writing about them in the Sinful Seven. We interviewed Jessica Smetana and Michael Jr. about them on the Patreon last year and heard about fun stories such as the time they basically, their student body basically punched a bunch of Nazis at a train station and got them to leave South Bend. And also because they have one of the best home field apparel collections, really of any school out there.
Jesus, I'm out. I'm done. Jesus, that was mid-season shit, right? I'm out.
If you go to homefieldapparel.com, yes, this is an ad read. You will find.
I just want to say, Richard and I don't know that these are coming. This is
no idea.
Not manufactured sports talk laughter. We don't know that this is coming.
You will find a one of a kind collection of Notre Dame retro vintage, whatever you'd call it, officially licensed apparel made with care by the team at Homefield. I think my favorite, what do you call those long sleeve I think like baseball tees that have like the different colored sleeves that don't go all the way down to your wrist.
Is that called a raglan?
Something like that. There's one with the leprechaun that just says fighting Irish, but like fighting with the apostrophe, which I think a number of these shirts have rather than fighting with the G.
I was right.
Just looks really good. Looks really good.
That's a raglan shirt.
Notre Dame's Homefield collection is one of the best. They're all great though. Go to homefieldapparel.com. If you Google Split Zone Duo t-shirt, you'll see something come up from us there as well. We have some exciting things coming down the pipe not too long from now with Homefield that we will share with you at the time that they are ready. And we're very much looking forward to that. Thanks, Connor. Thanks, Homefield team. Greatly appreciate you. Someone want to do the mea culpa about how little we've talked about the actual 2022 season today and lately?
I think you're going to start to hear a lot about this because it's Big 12 media days this week, SEC next week, Big 10 the week after. You're going to hear a lot of people just kind of re-interface with ball and remember that that is why we do this. And that is why everybody in here got into this. Like nobody got into this to fucking talk about governance and the transfer portal. Like, you know, no, that's not why we do this. It's not why I do this. It's not very fun. I've been doing some conference preview stuff for SI and it's just so fucking nice to write about the games and the teams, obviously the players. It'll be nice to see the players next week when I'm in Atlanta. But you're going to hear a lot of that. Everybody is going to be like, it's so refreshing to actually be talking about football now after directly two summers, but really, if we're really talking about it, 2.5 years of some real slogging through bullshit.
Non-football dominating football, just in a narrative sense is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is where I think that it like that is a major difference between college football and the NFL when it comes to the offseason.
We launched this podcast at a time in which a lot of us, including the three of us, were sort of asking the existential question of like, should we give too much of a shit about college football? Which is that's a crazy question to ask considering the careers that we've developed. But that's what the last couple of years have been like. So yeah, I think just to see, I can't do an Alex Kirshner transition, but I'll try. I mean, has anyone here, Richard, I know you just said you started work on previews, but like, I don't feel in a football sense prepared for what's about to happen. I feel like that's my mea culpa.
I haven't watched film in months. Months.
I'm very interested in the listener reaction to us saying this and being honest and transparent because we see engagement and all these advanced stats and all this kind of stuff. There's an immediate reaction and engagement and payoff to doing the crazy realignment bullshit, just like there is in coaching season. But I think it's nagging at all of us. I don't want to speak for all three of us unless I'm right. We're not talking about football in really in any capacity.
That is changing. Conference previews are going to start with the next time we see you on this feed, and there's going to be quite a bit of actual football talk. I think we've all kind of been in the gym starting to work on our actual football talk muscles, so that's good. But a quick preview of conference preview season today. Do we want to talk about any particular topics, such as the one that I want to talk about, such as Minnesota and this PJ Fleck thing that happened like 2 weeks ago that everyone stopped talking about because it broke on like the very morning of USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten?
I was going to say, I feel like we had bigger fish to fry that day.
I know, right? No, that's it. Oh, quick shout out. I got my Dave Campbell. I put that in the I want to shout out all my friends, Greg and all the people. Congratulations on sending it to me on time. I'm not trying to be too much of a dick, though. It is, if you don't read Dave Campbell's Texas football preview, it is the best looking college football preview. Football, like preview mag, period. It's absolutely amazing. Everyone should get it. Just an unsolicited plug. Thank you, guys. I'm going to start actually starting my reading this weekend, Richard. So I got to catch up. Alex, what happened in Minnesota?
What happened in Minnesota was interesting, and I want to talk about it in a, I don't know, relatively non-judgmental way, just because I'm kind of curious about it. The very morning, like I said, that UCLA and USC made the move, there was a former player at Minnesota who kind of took PJ Fleck to the woodshed, just in terms of talking about his experience and how much he hated playing for PJ Fleck, how unsupported this player says he felt, and how lowly he thinks of his former head coach. And I think there were some more anonymous kind of Fleck complaints that came out that day as well. He had plenty of on the record defenders, which is usually how these things go. Like, see the Brian Harsin stuff at Auburn a couple months back. So I don't want to give like too much credence to, you know, one or two players being furious with a coach, because I understand how these things go. And there's a lot of different people in a college football program, and Fleck just kind of has an effect on people where you either like them or you really don't. But Godfrey, you said something to me that there's also been a ton of staff turnover there. And I was thinking about how a couple of years ago you heard something you almost never hear, which was his direct predecessor, or one of, you know, not direct, but almost his direct predecessor, Jerry Kill, like went on radio, I think, and said some really mean things about PJ Fleck. The reason I'm bringing it up is that because of how PJ Fleck is, I think that whenever it ends at Minnesota for him, it's going to be explosive, probably not pretty. And that might not be happening now, but I kind of wanted to talk about how we're feeling about this.
Well, I think the couple of things. First thing to note about PJ is that from people who have worked with him, he is an acquired taste. He is a type of guy who either you are on board or you aren't.
Yes. Yeah, I will confirm that.
And there are people who realized they weren't on board and hopped off the ship.
After they got on the boat.
After they got on the boat and hopped off the ship.
Yeah.
Because they realized that.
Yeah. Or they just took a Big Ten job. I mean, look, yeah.
I think there are people in college sports who I think, And I know that the young man's Twitter screed kind of was like, he's fake, he's phony, like da 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 da. So, and that's what he's saying. But I think that what I'm trying to say when I say I don't think PJ Fleck is phony is this specific thing. There are a lot of people whose public persona on TV or what have you does not necessarily match who they are in a sense of energy, you know, collegial nature, like all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
What I mean to say about PJ Fleck is that the guy who you see jumping into dog piles and like yelling, "Row the boat," and like being like really that persona, like that is very much what he is behind closed doors. I mean, yeah. From a mood and temperament and energy standpoint, he's like 4 a.m. guy.
Yeah. I would back all that up, definitely. You know, without getting into... Okay, one thing I want to point out, and I want to be very careful about this, Alex. We see sometimes these, like, dam-bursting social media call-outs. And one of the things that I caution is this is a new form of media. Not new media. I'm saying this is a new form of assimilating information and presenting it as fact or trying to verify it as fact. And across a lot of spectrums that have nothing to do with sports in the news media, these Twitter pylons are call outs. Sometimes they're dead on. Sometimes they are the canaries in the coal mine that we in the media sort of assume them to be. Sometimes they are witch hunts completely. Sometimes they are dead fucking wrong.
Sometimes they're sour grapes.
Yes.
They just are.
Thank you, Richard, for splitting the difference, because I think that's the median and the mode there is that it's just... Sometimes it's players being pissed off at coaches and they go to social media because it's a newer platform where they can speak out and they're completely entitled to. What I'm cautioning against is that we just don't pass any of this off as gospel. In a lot of these occasions, and I'm speaking less for myself and more for just people I've talked to in the business, these kids don't follow up. In other words, like, hey, I saw that you said this about your head coach. Can you talk to me on the record? Most of them just duck. They just think that I can say exactly what I want to.
I said what I said.
Yeah.
And I said what I said.
And I appreciate that you have a platform to say what you want to say, but don't expect me to pass that off as fact. That's not how the game works, kiddo. Like, this is just, sorry, it's big boy shit. So all that being said, I think what PJ is an example of is another example of maybe I think we're seeing the death of the meme coach. I think we're seeing the decline of the meme coach.
I would agree, because I think that I would agree in the Brian Kelly is LSU's head coach right now, not Ed Orgeron kind of way.
I think that's a great point. I think the row the boat, the 404, the hey guys, what's our branding message going to be, has taken a significant step back in the wake of that, and also the Sam Pittmans of the world. I keep going back to one of the most like shrugged at hires.
Just be normal, man. Just be a normal.
Just be a guy. Be a guy who's a fucking journeyman, well-educated football coach, educated in both in staffing and in external comms and all that, but like also a ball coach. It's okay just to be a ball coach. And I think if anything, as the risk increases, because we invest so much money in this one position, this goes back to the free segment. We continue to put so much money and importance on one position. Eccentricity suddenly becomes alarming, or more alarming, I should say. Whereas even just up until recently, we were looking for more of a dynamic sort of outlier vibe, kind of this like software VC culture of like, this guy's a maverick. It's kind of like,
we've talked about it in a sense of the higher up the Power Five totem pole you get, the higher up the totem pole you get, the more CEO-y you have to be, kind of thing.
And I just think that we're coming back around to not having somebody who's on Instagram and having a more sort of staid and boring personality who just delivers. Hire a social media coordinator, hire a graphics department, make sure your NIL is well stocked. Winning sort of solves all that. Like, Luke Fickell is not a particularly, I wouldn't call him enigmatic. I think he's a very serious driven dude, but like, he'd get a Big Ten job tomorrow over some of the people who are more concerned with the hashtags.
That's going to be something that I'm going to watch. Now that Godfrey has said that, Jeff Collins is going 9-3 this year, and Georgia Tech is rebounding to the top of the sport, and he is rejoining Twitter.
Talk about Mea culpa. I got it right. Jeez.
Folks, we will see you next week. We'll actually be back earlier in the week than usual.
We got a surprise.
We're going to have some stuff for you next week, conference previews and more. We're very excited about it.
We got a lot coming.